Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If you look at this agreement, and the president has been clear that we need serious debt reduction, and he's going to lay out an approach this week.
This week, says presidential advisor David Plouffe, after the Friday night announcement of the $38 billion budget cut compromise for the next 6 months. And now, as we all know, come the next round of a truly historic budget debate, probably a once-in-a-generation reset of American values and priorities as expressed through government spending, with nearly everything about money on the table: health care for the poor and elderly, debt load for the young, taxes for the rich, social mobility for the poor. Last week, the Republicans began the negotiation in earnest with the Paul Ryan budget that included the end of Medicare and Medicaid as we know them now. This week, the president will respond in a Wednesday speech. Here is about a minute of Obama advisor David Plouffe on Fox News Sunday.
Well, he'll lay out his approach this week in terms of the scale of deficit reduction he thinks the country needs so we can grow economically and win the future. A balanced approach. Obviously, we need to look at all corners of government. As he said previously, his health care law is $1 trillion in deficit reduction over the next two decades, but we have to do more there. We have to look at more spending here carefully. As he said, we have to use a scalpel, not a machete. And obviously, this is going to be one distinction with the Congressional Republican plan that was announced this week. That plan would give the average millionaire over $200,000 in tax cuts, but ask a lot more of senior citizens. It would double their health care costs, $6,000 a year down the road, cut education, cut energy investments at a time of record gas prices. So we're going to have a big debate.
There was Obama advisor David Plouffe on Fox News Sunday, previewing a little bit of the president's speech to come on Wednesday and certainly the debate to come. Listeners will take calls from Obama voters, Tea Party supporters, and swing voter independents. We'll put you on the air in a few minutes. You can start calling now and get in line if you're in any of those camps. And since we want to take a few from each and be really politically diverse here, we're going to ask you to identify yourselves politically to our screener. Are you an Obama voter, a Tea Party supporter, a swing voter independent? We're definitely looking for some of each of you. And any other way you want to identify yourself, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 on the deal that was already struck. And joining us now is ABC News White House correspondent Jake Tapper. Hi, Jake. Thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. It's a pleasure.
Let's start by looking forward. What can you tell us so far about what President Obama will propose in his speech on Wednesday? Anything more specific than David Plouffe said there?
You'll see some what they'll call savings, which is a cut, but one supposedly strategically placed at entitlement programs like Medicare and Medicaid. That will be the most controversial. There'll be proposals about increasing taxes on upper-income Americans, as the president has proposed in the past. And then you'll see spending cuts. I'm not sure how detailed the spending cuts are going to be. I think they're still working that out. But the president, now with a deficit very much in the zeitgeist, the president will talk about his proposal, which was not in his budget proposal a few weeks ago, but has now joined the forefront of American discourse.
Have they announced a time for that speech, by the way? Will it be during our program?
I don't know, Brian. As soon as I know, I'll tell you.
All right. Now, let's go through some of the details of the Ryan plan and give me your best guess as to how President Obama might approach it differently. The Ryan plan avoided the so-called third rail of American politics known as Social Security. Word is the president's plan will touch it. Any idea how?
I don't know that the president's plan will touch it. The president has said that Social Security is not, he's repeatedly said that Social Security is not part of the current financial crisis, but that is something that he's willing to talk about in terms of tweaks or whatever is necessary to keep the program and the Social Security Trust Fund solvent, but that he doesn't see it as necessarily part of the debate. And I think that it's likely that you'll see the president not fully run towards Social Security. As you mentioned, Congressman Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, has talked about a number of big cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Medicaid would become a block grant program for states, and Medicare would be, instead of having the government run a healthcare program, it would be vouchers for individuals where they could buy private insurance using these Medicare vouchers. Congressman Ryan also proposes lowering tax rates, and I think his program is projected to cut about $4 trillion from the deficit, from the debt, over the next 10 years, which is pretty roughly the same amount that President Obama's debt commission, whose recommendations the president did not embrace, nor did Congressman Ryan, who was on it, vote for them, also cut about $4 trillion. And just as a reminder for listeners, $4 trillion over the next 10 years is roughly the cost of extending all the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy and for the middle class. It was actually the wealthiers, I think it was about $700 billion of that $4 trillion is for the wealthy, and the remaining 3.3 is for everyone else.
In other words, Jake, if we had the Clinton era tax rates in effect, a time, by the way, when there was astronomical growth, not to say that was all as a result of government policy, but if we just had the Clinton era income tax rates in effect, there would be no projected government deficit going forward?
No. I'm just saying that it would be $4 trillion less. And if President Obama and the Republicans, instead of passing an extension of these lower rates from the Bush years for every taxpaying American, if instead of extending them in December, they had been allowed to expire, and I'm not talking about the economic consequences of that, because there's a whole argument to be made that that would have been bad for the economy and that would have created debt in its own right. But just based on how much it will cost in terms of, and I'm using the word cost in quotes, that's $4 trillion in revenue that the government will not be taking in.
Right. But you are still saying, though, that if the Clinton tax rates were in effect, then the total amount that Ryan is going after, if we accept that that's $4 trillion, would not have been necessary.
The Ryan budget has debt. I mean, it's not without debt. The Ryan budget has projected debt.
Yes. If we take the endpoint of the Ryan budget as an acceptable level of debt, then it all wouldn't have been necessary if we had the Clinton tax rates in effect. But to engage in this debate at all with respect to President Obama, does he have to reject the view of liberal economists that the time is still not right for a focus on the deficit, that in probably the worst jobs crisis since the Great Depression, he should be talking much more about stimulating the economy than withdrawing from it?
Yeah. Absolutely, he has to reject that argument if he is running towards this. And he has been rhetorically and in his policies. I mean, there are those who thought that the stimulus needed to be much larger than the $800 billion stimulus roughly cost. There are those, Paul Krugman and others on the left, economists, who say that was too timid. And they are also arguing that this is not the many on the left are arguing that this is not the time to be focusing on the debt and deficit as the economy is still so fragile.
Now, there is an analysis in Ross Douthat's column, conservative columnist in the New York Times today, that says the Ryan plan does acknowledge in its way that you don't run headlong away from government spending at a time of a jobs crisis, because it does it gradually. I don't know if you want to weigh into that with an analysis, but that there's some acknowledgement there that government spending does actually goose the economy rather than rather than harm the economy, even though it's in a very backhanded way. Is there any discussion like that on Capitol Hill that you know of?
Sure, absolutely. And, look, in the debt commission, everything was eased in over 2 or 3 years, and I suspect what we're going to see some from President Obama. I don't know how specific he's going to be on Wednesday, but I suspect we're going to hear, at least rhetorically, the idea that these cuts cannot come immediately. This has to be phased in over time because the economy is still so fragile. But look, the big issue here is that the debate that needs to happen is one that has to do with what we as Americans get from our government, what we expect, what we want, and what we're willing to pay for it. And that debate is one that I think a lot of Americans would be surprised to find out the realities of where the money is, in the immortal words of Willie Sutton. The idea that I think a lot of Americans, at least according to polling, believe that if you get rid of waste, fraud and abuse and eliminate the foreign aid budget, which a lot of Americans, according to polls, think is about a quarter of the budget when it's actually about 1%, there is this misperception that that would do a lot to stave off the debt and the deficit. It's just not the case.
It just shows how few Americans probably pay attention to the news. I'll bet most listeners to this show understand that, you know, the big drivers of the deficit are Medicare and Medicaid and the military, not yet Social Security, but probably in the future Social Security if nothing changes, and the tax rates depleting revenue over the last 10 years, not to mention $1 trillion on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But most Americans, even though we've had this massive coverage for the last 6 months since the deficit commissions came out with their report, and your reporting on ABC and the front page of the Times and, you know, all these other major news organizations that said over and over again the deficit is driven by healthcare entitlements and the military and the revenue stream, people still don't get it. I guess that just means Americans, you know, just aren't paying attention to the news.
I think another possible source of any confusion is the rhetoric from politicians who for decades now have been promising a free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to give anything up. We are going to go to Washington and take care of this. I think you can't discount how much politicians exploit vulnerabilities. I mean, look, the Ryan proposal. I've read liberal pundits and writers talking about how great it's going to be for Democrats in 2012 to have the Ryan proposal to run against. I'm not taking a position on the Ryan proposal one way or the other, but that is the reaction mm-hmm. every time from the left and the right. Somebody comes out with a way to reduce the deficit, not saying that this is the right way,
right.
And immediately gets attacked from the other side.
Right.
And,
but now President Obama is going to weigh in with presumably a serious counterproposal, and then they'll both have things on the table to attack. But it is in the context of the reality, which is really what you're pointing out here, that the polls show Americans want two big things from their government. They want low taxes and plenty of entitlements.
Right.
And those two things are very hard to square. Jake Tapper, ABC News White House correspondent, is my guest on WNYC. I want to play a clip of Obama from Friday night after the budget agreement was reached at the final hour just before the government would have endured a partial shutdown, and take a few of the phone calls that we're getting for you from Obama supporters on what they think of this. But let's look back with a clip to Friday night when they announced the budget deal that prevented a government shutdown. And the president came out, this is a little before midnight on Friday night, embracing the deal as a historic victory.
A few months ago, I was able to sign a tax cut for American families because both parties worked through their differences and found common ground. Now, the same cooperation has made it possible for us to move forward with the biggest annual spending cut in history. And it's my sincere hope that we can continue to come together as we face the many difficult challenges that lie ahead.
So that content, Jake, and that tone took a lot of progressives aback. Why did the president put it that way rather than slam Republicans for forcing him into a deal that's bad for the poor and middle class and bad for America, which he might really believe?
Well, why would he declare defeat? Why would he come out and say, he's the president of the United States. I don't think anybody can really, it would be very difficult for him to argue that he was forced into anything. He's the president. He has the ultimate, he has the veto pen. He can do, he has more power than any other American, in the country. So I think the inclination is always to declare victory for politicians, even if they get the fuzzy end of the lollipop in negotiations. No matter what happens, you're going to hear both sides say, we declare victory. This is good. And also, one of the things that President Obama's counting on for 2012 is in order to win back these independent voters that he's had trouble with since his election in 2008, is the idea that he's an adult. He can bring the country together. He can help broker compromise. And, that's why you keep hearing people, Democrats and members of the Obama administration, use the term, it's time for a grown-up conversation, it's time for an adult conversation. What they're subliminally trying to convey is that the other side is not adult, is not mature.
Right.
I think those themes you're going to hear a lot more in 2012.
But I wonder if what he's really positioning himself for, looking to 2012, is this acceptance that, in a way, him and Boehner are the adults in the room, and they're both going to be willing to some degree to try to marginalize the Tea Party on the right and more liberal Democrats on the left.
Certainly with the Tea Party on the right, I think it's true. And I think they're going to try to do that, not Boehner, but the president. And I think you're also going to hear that from, whoever the Republican presidential candidate ultimately ends up being the nominee. That's going to be a daunting process in which there's going to be potentially a lot of talk about where the president's birth certificate is and things along those lines, and socialism, and depending on who ultimately is victorious from that process, it could be problematic for them because they will have had to deal with a whole bunch of issues that independent voters and a lot of people who are mainly concerned about their jobs find distasteful. This whole idea of where the president was born and whether or not he's a socialist and these conversations that are really, to a lot of Americans, distractions because they just want to talk about jobs.
Let's hear from a few Obama voters and what they think about this deal and his positioning of this deal. Mana in Connecticut, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I must say that I have for years wondered why the simplest way to start this lowering of costs of drug care, of Medicare, is for it to undo that black letter law that was passed at 3 a.m. by the Republicans, that there would be black letter law denying the government the ability to negotiate pharmaceutical company prices, just as the Veterans Administration and so on.
Thank you. Are you feeling okay about President Obama right now?
I don't know.
Pardon? Okay, I think we lost Monica. Kevin in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm just calling to say that it's time for the wealthy in this country to pay their fair share of taxes. The tax rates for the wealthy have been going down, essentially only down, since the Eisenhower administration. And even people like Warren Buffett, who are themselves extremely wealthy, say that often because of payroll taxes and Medicare that at least for Social Security, are capped at $106,000 or so.
So that's the policy you would like to see. Tell me what you think of the budget agreement that was struck on Friday, if you've been paying attention.
Yeah, I think the tone was wrong from Obama. I think you mentioned, you were talking about this earlier. The conversation has become centered around cuts and only cuts. And I think the Democrats have lost their way. I think that the income inequality in this country has become so great that it needs to be addressed. And I think that should have been a part of the conversation instead of only cuts.
Kevin, thank you very much. Ron in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. What did you think of the agreement Friday night?
Well, Friday night, I thought, if anything, Obama was a little bit too timid. Mm-hmm. But I had feelings about the Ryan thing. I thought that I feel that Obama should be much more aggressive, and that should put the shoe on the other foot and not even pay any attention to the Ryan plan, but put forth a plan of his own.
And did you tell us, Greener, you think that the president should meet the Republicans halfway?
I said halfway, but that's actually I mean a little bit further.
Uh-huh. In other words, go, well, you said it, ignore the Ryan plan and do something. But do what? Any suggestions?
Well, instead of putting forth cuts, maybe put forth expenses that have to be met.
In other words, the things that we should be spending money on.
Yes.
Ron, thank you very much. That's an interesting idea, Jake, to do it in the positive rather than in the negative. And, you know, maybe that's what we will hear from President Obama to some degree on Wednesday. If all the Republicans want to say is get government off our backs, government spending is the problem, it, you know, creates more problems than it solves, then Obama, as a matter of philosophy, maybe needs to reassert that government is really important in these various realms.
Yeah. I mean, everybody hates the government, you know, until they need the government. And that's why you have the distinguishing between essential and non-essential employees when there's about to be a government shutdown, because there are some people that even if we don't have the money to fund the government, we're going to find a way to fund the government. It's interesting, though, that your first caller talked about the Medicare prescription drug benefit passed by one of George W. Bush's signature achievements. That same inability to negotiate was in the healthcare law. It was part of the deal cut with Big Pharma for President Obama's signature healthcare accomplishment.
That's right. So before you go, do you see many defections from the final vote for this Friday night deal for members of Congress on either side? Are we going to see a new emerging center-right, center-left coalition, if you will, that's becoming a force if we're seeing, you know, maybe Michelle Bachmann voting no on one side and Gerald Nadler voting no on the other side? If it comes out that way, I don't know how they're going to vote.
I don't know that it's any long-term coalition, but yes, I mean, I think we're going to see that sort of vote pattern. But it's going to be these next few weeks, months are going to be very interesting when it comes to the debt ceiling, because I just want your listeners to keep in mind, this argument last week was over $38.5 billion. To raise the debt ceiling, which needs to be raised in May, to raise it just so the government has enough money, is able to borrow enough money to survive until the end of 2012, just a year and change. That is $1.9 trillion that the debt ceiling will need to be raised. That is 50 times what last week's argument was about. So the stakes could not be higher.
Jake Tapper, ABC News White House correspondent, we really appreciate you giving us some time this morning.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we're going to turn the page, but stay on this topic, and we're going to take calls now that we've heard some from some Obama voters, from political independents, and some of you may well have voted for Obama in 2008, as many indies did, and those of you who consider yourselves Tea Party supporters. What do you think of the deal that was struck on Friday night? Did it leave you more cold toward your party's leadership? If you're a Republican, if you're an independent, did it leave you feeling better about President Obama, as he obviously intended it to do, willing to, you know, suffer a lack of enthusiasm on the part of his progressive base in order to continue to cultivate his image as more of a bridge builder kind of president? So Tea Party supporters and other Republicans and swing voter independents, if you're that kind of independent who could vote for a Democrat or a Republican on a given day, depending on the person and the issue, we want to hear from you right now. We'll spend about 10 minutes taking some phone calls from those of you who are Republicans and independents, Tea Party supporters, and others in the GOP or independents. Call us up right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and we'll take your calls right after this.